Hello, everyone. This is Rosalind Sadaka, and I want to welcome you to another interview on behalf of International Child Centered Divorce Month, which is celebrated every January. And I have with us today an outstanding guest expert who's going to be sharing a message that I think is one of the most valuable messages you are going to be hearing. So I'm privileged and delighted that she is with us. And she is with us from South Africa. So being that I'm from the United States, that's quite a distance away, and we're just thrilled to have her expertise on board with us. And her name is Philippa Levitt, and she is a therapist who specializes in what's called spiritual divorce. So I'm going to say welcome, Philippa.
Thank you. Thank you, Rosalind, and thank you for having me on your show.
Well, I'm honored that you're taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us, and I want to ask you first if you could tell us a little bit about your background. And I know that you've traveled a great distance in your professional work to come to the place of being a specialist in spiritual divorce. So tell us a little bit about your journey.
Yes, sure, absolutely. Thank you. Well, I began as a lawyer and practiced as such for many years, and I did a fair amount of divorces when I practiced as a lawyer. And I really regard that time of my life as when my life was centered in the left side of my brain. Then I felt that there was something missing and something lacking, and I went in search of something more, and there were two things that I did. The first was I went on a spiritual journey to try and find deeper answers and deeper meaning, number one, and number two, on an art journey. And there I was in the right side of my brain, really lateral thinking and breaking boundaries and barriers, and that was fantastic and magnificent. But then the last part of my journey, insofar as it is a journey, is I have really begun to do this kind of work, which is spiritual divorce, which is centered in my heart. And, you know, they say that the longest journey that you can take is from your head to your heart. And I've taken a slightly circuitous route going via from my left brain to my right brain and down to my heart. And this is, of course, the work that brings me the most pleasure and the most joy. And really it's working with empowerment of people across the board, all cultures, all religions, just to empower people. And that's really what the spiritual divorce part of my practice is about.
Wow. Well, it's wonderful to talk to someone who has the legal background and the experience of being an attorney who is also embracing the spiritual side and the side that really cares and has the compassion about what the emotional situation that a divorce is all about. And bringing those two together can only be of value to your clients. So they're very fortunate to be connected with you. Let's talk about spiritual divorce and what it is, so we could start from there.
Okay, great. So, Rosalind, this is a program which was developed by Debbie Ford. Debbie Ford is the New York Times best-selling author of several books. And this program is based on her book, which is called Spiritual Divorce, Divorce as a Catalyst for an Extraordinary Life. And I came across this book and read it and just knew that I needed to teach it because I thought it was perhaps one of the most brilliant books I'd ever read. And what I loved about it was that it just combined all the years and years of esoteric research that I had done. It was all put into practice in a way that could transform lives. And through that, I got to actually realizing that she did do training programs for people, and that is what I have been on. So what it basically is it's a 13-week coaching program. And it's really a whole new approach to divorce because it's about using your loss and resentment and anger that comes up in a divorce to step into an extraordinary life. So it's about using that instead of pushing it away and drinking over it or eating over it or doing everything that you can not to have to face it. We actually take that and we use it to get to the next level of who you can be. And what the process does is it gives you enormous clarity and insight into what happened. You feel supported to take radical responsibility for the situation in which you have found yourself. And really, I guess most centrally, you go from seeing yourself as a victim of the situation to beginning to see yourself as a powerful co-creator. And it consists of 7 spiritual laws. You do one a week, and each one helps to liberate you from the limited perspective through which you have viewed the situation and to begin to see your divorce through new empowered eyes. And by the end of the process, you've had a huge shift in perception. And really, at the Ford Institute, what we do is that we define transformation as a shift in perception. And that's really, you start, it's almost like you're starting in one place, a week later you've stepped to the side, and a week later you've stepped even more to the side, and by the end of the 13 weeks, you are standing on in a totally different place. You are seeing your divorce in a completely different way, and, you know, it's magnificent, and it's really liberating. And then it also consists of 2 right questions from Debbie's book, The Right Questions. The first one being, and just by mentioning it, you can hear how powerful it is. Am I looking for what's right, or am I looking for what's wrong? And the other one is this an act of faith, or is this an act of fear? And you begin to see where you're coming from faith and where you're coming from fear, and where you're placing your faith in your fear, and where you're placing your faith in a kind of a trust that the universe is benevolent, and on some level, you're going somewhere new. You may not know where it is, but that it's going to be okay.
Let me stop you here for a moment so I could just get some clarification for people, because it sounds like this is a program that involves a lot of commitment on the part of your client. Whoever is involved is committing to a 13-week commitment of working with you. Is that correct?
Yes, but in fact, that's an excellent question. It's a call. It's done by way of a telephone call,
mm-hmm.
Once a week. So the call, you literally schedule it, say, for a Monday evening. And that is 1 hour to 1 hour and 15 minutes maximum. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have a call until the following Monday evening at
yes.
the same time. And there is a commitment in between, in that there is homework. So the concepts that you learn in that one hour and 15 minutes, you actually then take it into your life. And that's the difference. So it's not just, you know, you're being inspired and then you let it go. It's I then
right.
hold the person accountable for doing what it is that they need to be doing. And they actually get the action step of what it is they need to do. And then they take that into their lives. And then I ask them, did you do it? And we really have a discussion about that. And it's fantastic.
Yes. And I've read the book. I'm very, very impressed with all of the tenets and the philosophy, and advocated very strongly to everyone who's part of my child-centered divorce network.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'm totally on board with you, but for those for whom this is new, we want to make sure that they're clear about this and not overwhelmed by the concept. So let me ask you this. If there are seven important steps that you take people through, and obviously everyone is going to resonate with, say, 2 or 3 that are most dynamic or important for them in their own process,
yes.
even though every one of those steps is very important, are there people who resist and say, well, I don't want to focus on 4 and 5, I'm just interested in number 3 or number 5 or whatever? Is it essential for people to go through each of those steps one by one, regardless of what their personal circumstances are?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and it is a step-by-step process. It is cumulative. Each week leads to the next week, but by the same token, there are certain of the, we call them distinctions, or you could call them a law, but some distinctions deeply resonate with certain people, and others deeply resonate with other people. So there are, like, I have my favorite distinctions. There are a couple that I can see very clearly how they really incredibly transformed my life and the way in which I looked at things. And there are others which I get and really great, and but didn't do the same amount of transformation. So that absolutely is the case. But what I've learned through working with clients is that it's not for me to decide, oh, you know what, this one isn't quite, this might not do it for her. Not at all, because I never know. And and I'm always surprised by what it is that works. So we definitely do go through each one. It might be, Rosalind, that say you're doing the law of acceptance, and I notice that 4 or 5 weeks into the process, there's something that my client is still not accepting. We certainly can go back and do acceptance again.
Excellent. Another important thing about the program is that it focuses on you, the divorced individual, first. Even though you have a lot of other challenges surrounding you, it's like the old adage of when you're on the airplane, you have to put the air, take the air first before you can possibly give it to your children.
Mm-hmm.
And this is like a safety net for you, because as a divorced parent, if you're not whole and centered and coming from a place of peace and understanding all the emotional and psychological dynamics that are part of the divorce process, then you're not going to be doing a favor for your children. So it's very important to get this information. And I love you because, as many of our listeners know, I am the founder of the Child-Centered Divorce Network, and so my focus in the divorce world is on the piece about parenting and divorce, how parents can be the best possible parents, safeguard their children, and prevent emotional and psychological distress for their children before, during, and long after the divorce. So I know that the spiritual divorce process takes into account the fact that a high percentage of people getting divorced are parents, have children, have that extra stress. So tell us about ways that the spiritual divorce process enhances and benefits the children if one or both of the parents are coached through spiritual divorce.
Okay. Well, if one thinks about it, it makes sense that the more cooperation there is between the parents, the more empowered they feel, the higher their level of consciousness, the deeper the clarity, the more they are supported and the less that they feel like a victim, the better it's going to be for the children. And, you know, there is that great saying by Emerson, which Debbie often quotes, which is, who you are speaks so loud, I cannot hear what you are saying. And children are incredibly perceptive. They can see what's going on, even if you have the discipline not to talk about it and not to share how terrible you're feeling or how angry you are. They know. They can feel it. And so to work on yourself has to have positive effects for the child to see a parent coping and taking back their power and beginning to make powerful, responsible decisions, for children to see their parents just getting along and cooperating and coming to agreements and doing things that are in their best interest and just connecting in a useful and meaningful way after the divorce can really change the entire dynamic for them of the experience and limit the amount of damage that could possibly happen if there's a major war that is going on between the two parents. And when, as a parent, you know that your emotional and spiritual needs are being taken care of, you'll have the energy and the ability, you know, that you'll have the energy and the ability to do the same for your family, as you have said. So blame and resentment and non-forgiveness, you know, it just completely drains our energy and just keeps us stuck in the past, repeating those same old patterns over and over again. And if we were to go into some of the distinctions, you'll begin to see how that can make such a huge difference. I don't know if you want to talk about any of the distinctions, but, you know, even our, right at the beginning, one of our first things is we work with the law of acceptance. And when you're working with accepting what has happened, it is an incredibly, you can then work out what it is that you need to do next. So it's only when you have the courage, and this is the I Ching that I'm quoting, to face things exactly as they are, without any self-deception, without any story or blame, that a light can develop to guide you on the path to successfully healing your heart. So the law of acceptance is really saying that nothing happens by accident. Everything is exactly as it should be, and we are constantly evolving, and we are always being supported to get to the next level of our evolution. And so we need to accept what has happened, but crucial to understanding that is to accept, is to separate fact from fiction. And we are all guilty of this. We have a story about what happens. Like, say, for example, you were to bump into an old friend that you haven't seen for many years, and you were to tell them about what happened in your divorce. We met, we got married, and then I found out that there was a betrayal, or there was it, and you have a huge story around it. That story consists of, A, the objective facts, and, B, the meanings that we make around that. And it's really important to separate the facts from those meanings and those conclusions that we've made, because then we can say, okay, I can accept the fact. The fact of the matter is, for example, we got divorced on such and such a date. The fiction is, well, the children will be messed up forever, or that means I'm a failure. So I interpret, those are just interpretations, the second part of it, and that varies from person to person. So just sitting down with your drama and sitting down and combing out, okay, what if this is actual fact? What if this is fiction? What if this is hearsay? As a lawyer, you can't admit the evidence of hearsay, and yet we may have heard this or we may have heard that, and we're not sure if it's true, but we suspect that it is, and it completely sort of leads us into a spiral of anger and resentment, and we don't even know that it's true. So it's very, very clear that we're going to work with the facts, and the facts are always manageable. They always, you can always work with them. Here are the facts, now what to do. As long as you're not accepting the facts, you're stuck, and you can't move on to the next level. So if you were to apply that to the children, they would see a parent who's efficient, who has accepted what the situation is and is now making a new plan. What could be more powerful for the child to witness than that?
That absolutely. I think that is, everything you've said is so right on. And I know when I coach my clients, I always talk to them about looking for the lesson in your life experience and also looking for the gift. And no matter how dramatic and tragic you may think your divorce was, and there's some very sad stories that we hear, and there's people who go through terrible experiences in their divorce, or they see it as a terrible experience. But no matter what those circumstances are, if you look and you find the lesson, something, I know now that I won't do this, I realize I need to be more empowered in the future, there's decisions that I will always make differently, then there's some value that you could put into that experience, and you don't have to look at it with regret. And if you look even deeper, I know, especially with hindsight, you start finding that there are gifts, there are insights that you get that you never would have had you not gone through that experience. And as a parent, we are constantly role modeling for our children how they should behave and what adults should look like, what adult behavior can be like. And if we're modeling responsible behavior and we're modeling, understanding that we all make mistakes and we can remedy those mistakes and start over and do things differently, then the children look at it in a positive and powerful way, as opposed to looking at their lives full of fear and regret and anxiety. So we can use every moment in our divorce experience as lessons for ourselves and for our children and really make an impact on them. And from everything you've been saying, I see that you know, we are in alignment in what we are coaching and teaching and what we've learned. And I think it's wonderful because you can't get the lessons you've been talking about without benefiting for yourself as well as for your children on a multitude of levels. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about forgiveness because it's a very important piece of the puzzle. And I know it's important for any level of spiritual work, and applying it to divorce is very, very valuable.
Absolutely. And just one quick thing I want to add to what you say, because I couldn't agree with every word you say is exactly where we're coming from. And in this work, we become what Debbie has referred to as warriors for the light. We don't stop until we find the light in the situation, even if it's saying, what do I know now that I didn't know before I went through this? What qualities have I had to pull out in myself? You know, we don't stop until we find that silver lining. And that, I think, is just such a wonderful approach to life, because we're all going to have ups and downs. And we can either just beat ourselves up about it and feel terrible about it, or we can sit down and look at it and say, okay, well, what is it that I have learned? What is it that I've gained from this situation? Who am I now because of it? So I love that you say that. And then forgiveness is absolutely important, and we do this in over two weeks. It's so important. Mm-hmm. And the first thing is we do forgiveness of the other. That's the first one. And we certainly don't force anybody to forgive anybody. But what we do is say, are you willing to even consider it? And we make a very important distinction about it, and that is we say that forgiving is not about condoning. So we make a very – we're not saying forgive and say it's fine for somebody to treat you like that. Absolutely not. It's not condoning. But it's about really giving yourself the gift of freeing up all of the energies that are blocking you from experiencing your divine nature or who you really are. And we see it as an act of courage, because we see it as breaking down the walls that we – mistakenly thought would protect us. And we also see it as an act of self-love. And we also, you know, forgiveness, one of the ways we see it, it's a hallway between the past and a new future. And really, we see it as cutting that karmic cord that you have with the person. And it unfolds naturally. We don't just start with forgiveness, because you can't just forgive. It unfolds naturally when you're able to see the wisdom that is hidden behind the painful events of your life, of your life, and when you're able to, as you yourself said, see the blessings and the gifts. And also it unfolds very naturally when you're able to understand the other person's pain and weaknesses. And I always quote this as part of it: meet them in the field beyond wrongdoing and right-doing. Rumi, the great poet, spoke about beyond notions of right-doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there. And I think that is what forgiveness is. Yes, this happened. There was this wrongdoing and that wrongdoing. But there's somewhere where I can meet you, where I can see you. I can see your pain. I can see what led you to behave in this way. I can see your fear. And I can see the gift that I've got. You know, you didn't support me financially. Look, I've had to learn to stand on my own two feet. That's the kind of thing. And what a magnificent gift that is. And then the second part of forgiveness is forgiveness of self. And really, we see self-forgiveness as wiping the internal slate clean. And it's about ceasing to beat yourself up. So important, because when we go through divorce, we land up beating ourselves up, blaming and resenting ourselves. And this is about letting go of all of that so that you can give yourself the gift of unconditional love and acceptance. And it's so beautifully constructed in this process, because you really work with an aspect of yourself that you've always hated, that you don't like, that you've pushed away, that you've tried to hide and you haven't wanted to show anybody. And we really, it's almost like the black sheep of your family, and you're bringing that part of you back into the fold of who you are, and you're learning to love and accept yourself. And it's just, it's beautiful, because ultimately, and I'm sure you'd agree, this whole experience is about developing self-love and self-acceptance. And then the world's your oyster. It's about your relationship with yourself.
Yes. And as you're talking, because everything you're saying is so beautiful and valuable, I'm thinking, too, that once you get this and you own this understanding, then you're imparting it in your children, and that is the greatest gift of all, because most of us were not raised with these insights, with this wisdom, and we've had to learn it and pick it up. You and I studying classes and years and mm-hmm. years of personal growth. If we could take our children and share with them and impart with them this philosophy and this understanding and this wisdom, we're saving them decades of pain and empowering them to make wiser decisions that are coming from a sense of self, a sense of taking responsibility for what happens to you in your life without blaming the outside world for everything, and looking with clarity, and the sense of saying there's a gift in every experience. What can I get from this, and how can I move ahead? Because children are wounded and scarred and harmed in so many ways through the divorce process, and in most cases, not intentionally by parents. But parents get so caught up in their drama, in the emotional turmoil they're going through, that they lose track of what's happening to their children. They lose that sense of empathy that you were just talking about, of feeling what it's like to be little Johnny at 7 years old and Susie mm-hmm. at 12 years old, and understanding what the world looks like through their eyes as they go through this experience. And universally, all experts are in agreement that the worst thing parents can do to their children is fight in front of them and belittle and put down the other parent to the children, because the damage that occurs is just so intense. So I spend most of my focus in trying to keep parents from making dangerous mistakes that affect the children. And I know on your side, when you're talking to parents and empowering them, you're giving them tools so that the stronger they are, the less they're going to be leaning on their parents, because some children end up parenting their parents. Their parents Absolutely. Become so emotionally distraught that the children are there, become little adults, and they have to parent their parents, which is so harmful for those children.
And then they often repeat that later on in life, in relationships.
Yes, yes.
And
so
it's
talk
very
a little
difficult
bit about
for them to
this.
Get out of that pattern, I would imagine.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's they've been trained from a young age to be doing that.
Exactly.
So and talk a little bit more about taking responsibility and how one can share with your children from a place that keeps them empowered and doesn't wound them emotionally.
Yes. Well, taking responsibility is really a turning point in the coaching relationship. And really, we're asking our clients to show up and take responsibility for that, how they, at some level, co-created and participated in this situation. And if you think about it, if it's all about somebody else out there, well, then they're powerless. If it was all him or her who made all the mistakes, and then they're powerless. But if they can begin to see how they co-created it, they begin to take their power back. And then, of course, when we get to the forgiveness, it's okay, so I'm human. I did that, but now I see it. So it's really to show them that they've got a choice. They can either stay the victim, pointing fingers and blaming and really keeping themselves trapped, or they can see the co-creation and they can look to see what role did they play, even if that role was that they stepped over issues because they didn't want to upset the apple cart, or they didn't want to have a fight, or they didn't want to stand up for their rights, rather. Or perhaps they didn't draw boundaries. They just allowed a boundary to be stepped over. Or perhaps they always wanted to please. They were people pleaser and they just never, ever stood in their power. Perhaps they brought in emotional baggage, or perhaps they were from childhood, as we were talking about a moment ago. or perhaps they were denying their power and their strength and their independence and not honoring and nurturing themselves. All of those co-create situations. And so when we talk about responsibility, what we do is we go in and we see what shadow belief lies behind that co-creation. And we find that the same shadow belief, which is basically a belief which you are not consciously aware of, but it's a conclusion that you drew when you were very young about yourself, such as, I don't matter, or I'm not good enough. Those are two very common ones. And we see that the same shadow belief that has us take too much responsibility for other people, running around them, trying to make everybody else happy, including our children, is the same shadow belief that has us taking too little responsibility in our own life. So those are like unconscious drivers that result in us setting ourselves up to be a victim. And if this is sounding, you know, sort of too complicated, when we do it, it becomes so clear. It becomes absolutely clear exactly what your unconscious driver is. And when we look at that and we shift that unconscious driver, that is taking radical responsibility, if you think about it. And you no longer need to go through your life creating and attracting situations that show that you don't matter or that you're not good enough. And what could, you know, I've heard this said before, though I'm not an authority on it, that a parent can only give to their child how good enough they are. They then pass that on to their child, and it's unlikely their children are going to get a better good enough on a deep level, even though they might be great achievers. Deep down, they feel as good as their parents did. So if you can shift that and increase your vibration on that, how amazing would that be for your children? And the second part of the law of responsibility is very much core to Debbie Ford's work. And it's really about when we disown, it's about taking back projection. And what we mean by that is we disown certain parts of ourselves as a result of first our caregivers and then ourselves judging these quality or parts of ourselves as wrong. So, for example, you might have been told when you are little that you're lazy. And so you decide that you are never going to be lazy again because you felt so awful and shamed when you were told you were lazy. You disown lazy. You become the most industrious person on the earth. But what happens then is you then project that quality and onto other people and judge them in that. And this really happens enormously in relationships and particularly in divorce. When you are pointing your finger at the other person, what we say is there are three fingers pointing back at you. And so ultimately, what we are asking you to do is to find those qualities in the other person. And this is radical responsibility. We are really going so far. We're saying, okay, say it was lazy. We are saying, find where are you in what is the quality of a person who is lazy? Well, it might just be he's lazy or not caring. It depends on what you say, what that quality is. And then you find that quality within yourself. Because as long as you are denying a part of yourself, as long as there's a part of you you cannot be with, that part won't let you be. And you will be calling it into your space. And so what you do is you project it out, or you see those qualities in you that you can't stand and that you hope no one ever finds. And you actually see them in other people. And the work that we do is we take those qualities back. And that is so crucial for transformation to occur, because we believe that that's why you went into the relationship in the first place. We are always moving towards wholeness, and we need to see in the mirror of other people the parts of us that we have denied and have pushed away. And then so what we do is we take those parts of us back, and we work with really first identifying what is that quality in the person I can't stand. Maybe it's mean, maybe it's weak, maybe it's lazy. Whatever it is, maybe it's the betrayer, whatever that quality is, we identify it. And, of course, it has to be something that upsets us and triggers us. Otherwise, it's not a projection. And then we need to find out how you are that. So where can I find that quality in me? How does that quality have expression in me? And we are all everything. So somewhere down the line, if you're honest with yourself, you'll find that. And then we look for the gifts of that quality. And what that helps us to own and claim and integrate and get that quality back. So you can hear this work goes really far and really deep. And what's so exciting about it, Rosalind, is that when you find, own, and embrace the quality in you that you saw in your ex that you couldn't stand, it just changes the entire dynamic, because what happens is that he or she then is given permission to shift. You're okay with that quality. You're not going into deep resistance every time you see it. And then that person has the chance of showing up differently. And incidentally, many people who go through this process land up getting together again or deepening and strengthening their relationship. So
yes,
I
hear that very, very readily, and because suddenly you get an entirely different perspective about the reality of what was taking place over the years and months that led up to the divorce. And all you need is one person to get new insights for a relationship. The balance changes in a relationship, and the whole dynamic can change. And for some parties, it may make sense to get back together. For others, it just may mean that you could part and continue on as friends, which, if you have children, makes such a positive difference in their life. Whatever it is, a healthier relationship following divorce is always going to be better for you. Because if we don't, one of the other areas I coach in is moving on after divorce and dating after divorce. I've written another book called 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Dating After 40, 50, and yes, 60. And the focus of that is about, if you don't do the inner work before you get out and start dating again, if you don't understand many of the things you've just been talking about, the shadow and the secrets and the things you've been repressing within yourself, the mistakes that you made, the parts you played that could be redone, the decisions that you could make differently, the insights about just how you were in your past relationships, the patterns that you're running over and over again, if you don't do any inner work, you're going to just go out and create another relationship with another person with another face, but with the same dynamic, and you're going to get right into that same relationship craziness. So divorce is no guarantee that you're going to start off in a better relationship next time around. In fact, the rates of second, third, fourth, fifth marriages after a divorce are get higher and higher each time around, because people are not doing the inner work. So if you stop at this point and do the kind of work that you're talking about, it's going to guarantee that you will be making different choices, different decisions, and opening the doors to healthier new relationships. And that's a wonderful gift to give to yourself and your future, as well as to your children.
I couldn't have put it better myself. You are absolutely on target. And we also have a concept called the microcosm of the macrocosm, which is that as humans we tend to be consistent with actions and tendencies from one set of circumstances or situations to another. And so therefore you can even use this to have a better relationship with your children, because if you weren't setting boundaries, for example, with your husband, it may be, not necessarily, that you don't set boundaries with your children. And
yeah.
So you can use these principles with your children. They work. I use them with my children all the time. And
totally
so
agree.
It just gives you such clarity. That's what I love about it, is that I've come out of this situation with enormous, enormous clarity.
Yes, I hear that, and I hear your passion, as well as your compassion, and that's so valuable for the people that you're working with. I also love the fact that this work is of equal value to women and men. I really am fighting against the gender wars when all women start blaming all men for the problems in relationships, and all men start blaming women for the problems in relationships, and that finger pointing, it's so important to realize that there are just very poor husbands and wives out there. There are people who make a lot of mistakes, and this isn't a gender issue. So let's all work on ourselves and make differences that are universal, and we don't have to be picking on one side or the other. So both of us work with men and women in our coaching, because they both men and women will get value from the same personal growth insights.
And these insights they're universal, really.
Yes.
They go across all. I mean, I've coached people all over the world, and of all different religions, and even of different races. And
yes.
it just is universal. This is the experience of being human, and this is the truth.
Exactly.
And
it's so
beautiful.
Well put.
It's just beautiful.
And so at this point, I want to make sure that you tell our listeners how they can find you, what ways they can contact you, learn more about you and your services, because as you said, you are available to people around the world, and you are a blessing. So how can people find you?
Okay, best place would be to visit my blog, which has got all my details, including my email address and my phone number, which is Coach Beyond, CoachBeyond. wordpress.com, and they can also go to Debbie Ford's website, which I would invite them to go to, www.debbieford.com, and there are many, many colleagues that I have all over the world, lots in North America, lots in Denmark, lots in Europe. And if they want to pick somebody who's more in their own time zone, they're welcome to pick one of my colleagues. It's the beginning of an amazing, amazing journey. And I really want to thank you for giving me this opportunity to share.
Well, I want to thank you, because you're clear and articulate and passionate about this topic, and you know from personal experience the value of it in your own life, so that you can transform that and translate that into the value into other people's lives as well. And that is so important. I just totally endorse the work you're doing and highly recommend that people connect with you. And once they get your email address, they can connect with you that way and chat in advance and see if you're a good fit for them. But it's definitely very, very valuable work. I also want to let listeners know that they can learn more about me, Rosalind Sadaka, and the work that I'm doing by visiting childcenteredDivorce.com. And I have a free weekly newsletter and a free ebook for everyone right on the homepage of the website, as well as a blog and articles and advice. And I have coaching services, and if you just click the coaching button, you can find out about my audio coaching programs and my one-on-one coaching. And so I'm easily accessible that way as well. And you could also email me at Rosalind, R-O-S-A-L-I-N-D, at childcenteredDivorce.com. So I want once again to say this is Philippa Levitt, and Philippa has been an enlightening guest. I know that everyone who's listened today has much to think about, and I hope you'll connect with her, because she is one of the wonderful experts who is collaborating on all the efforts that we make to spread the word about child-centered divorce, spread the word about spiritual divorce and conscious divorce, and making wise choices regardless of your divorce situation, so that you avoid litigation, avoid getting caught up in the courts and having decisions made for you, rather than taking empowerment and creating a cooperative divorce, so that your outcome can be positive for yourself, for your ex, as well as for your children. Philippa, do you have a final message that you want our listeners to take away, something that they should remember that will be of value to them?
Yes. Just what I'd like to say is that the ball is in your court. You can take your power back from the world around you. And really, this work is about freedom. This work is about becoming self-referring. And that is the most powerful thing that you can do and the greatest gift that you can give yourself and your children.
Oh, totally, totally agree. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to working and referring people to you.
Thank you, Rosalind. It's been wonderful. I've loved every minute, and lots of love.
Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening, and be sure to check on the Child-Centered Divorce website. If you click the International Child-Centered Divorce Month button on the menu bar, you'll find other teleseminars that you can listen to and take advantage of. Thanks so much for now. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Bye-bye.